You are listening to Golden Rule Radio, your weekly discussion of the precious metals markets and the markets closely associated with the metals. I'm Tori, alongside Miles and Rob, and together we have over 80 years of experience advising on and brokering the precious metals. Each week, the three of us try to provide you a good technical analysis as well as underlying fundamental analysis as to why the prices are doing what they're doing. And for those of you who wish to follow this program with visual charts and images, you can find us on YouTube or on our website at McIlvaney.com/radio. McIlvaney is McIlvaney.com/radio. So today we're going to get into the prices, the charts as always, the long, slow death of the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency anyway.
It's not dead yet.
It's not dead yet. But let's start with a recap of the week, Miles.
Thanks, Tori. Appreciate it. And it's going to be a relatively quiet week on the numbers this week. Most everything is still in its corrective phase, except for the S&P when we get to it. So as usual, we will start it off with gold. Gold down about 2% from our recording on Wednesday last week. Currently sitting at 4,738 points and well within its defined trading range at the moment. Silver, similar story, but of course, anything gold does, silver does a little bit better. So silver is actually down about 3.3%, a little more aggressive move down in silver. However, we did break above 80 this past week on a move up and a little bit of a push back down. So down 3.3% to $77.80, which is still a crazy big number that I'm not used to. Platinum, similar to silver, down 3.2%. And is still above that 2,000 mark, currently at $2,060. And platinum sister metal palladium down 2.6% at $1,534. Moving over to the paper markets, the S&P is up 1.8%, currently at 7,138. So the S&P has been on a nice little rally here over the last couple weeks after a little bit of rollover, potential downward action. All of a sudden, the S&P, it's almost like it got injected with nitrous, which may have happened on a financial scale. So, but the S&P is still climbing, pushing some new highs and all. And also with the metals down, S&P's up. Well, guess what else, guys? The dollar is also up over the last week. Now, not too much, and it is still languishing below that kind of 100 mark that we have on the dollar index, but the dollar's back up to 98.64.
We don't do deep dives on the equities markets, the stock market. It's always good to get the weekly recap so we can see how one market is moving compared to another. But I'll tell you, this is a crazy pace. It really rings sort of like the December and January price action in the metals when you're looking at the stocks. And the S&P 500 is on pace for a third week of 3% gains. And that has happened only twice since 1950. And both were reversals from really sharp declines. We've never seen that before at record highs. So we've got these record high stock market prices again. And now we've reached the most expensive valuation in history. The Warren Buffett indicator jumped to 227%, which means that's the market cap of stocks compared to GDP. 227% greater than GDP. That surpasses the dot-com bubble and the global financial crisis. So again, the most expensive valuation in history for stocks. It also rings true as to why, however, you allocate your portfolio in a diversified fashion, right? Yeah. We're not just gold bugs. We have a tool called the investment triangle that to me is just an invaluable tool when we're educating our clients.
Yeah, if you position a third in equities, growth and income, real estate, a third liquid like money market accounts or vaulted, and then a third in the metals, once one side of that triangle becomes overbalanced, you reallocate either to the liquid side or the metal side or from metals. Like right now, it's about 10 ounces of gold to equal the Dow Jones Industrial Average. When we get down to 3 ounces of gold equaling the Dow Jones Industrial Average, that base of your triangle is going to be over allocated and you need to shift out into either liquid or growth and income. So it keeps you balanced over the long term.
Yeah, it's really worth talking to one of us just to kind of walk through your own portfolio summary. And that's what we do. You can call us at 800-525-9556. And we can walk through that. But the reason I want to get into that is because we're going to get deeper into the dollar. We're going to get deeper into the metals. But it's important for the listener to understand we aren't just gold bugs for the sake of being gold bugs, and gold is the end all and the only solution. These markets are unbelievable. All markets, currency markets, the transports, the equities, the commodities, everything's just whipsawing. And every time I hear one of Miles's weekly recaps, I think, man, the volatility, something down 3.3% in a week, and it's just ho-hum as if it's nothing because the week before it was up 7%. It's hard to get used to, but...
One thing I wanted to say, I'm looking at your gold chart, and we're in a short-term downward trend, but when you look back over the longer term, what does that show you?
It's a skyscraper. Yeah, we've got pretty consistent growing, logarithmically growing price in gold, frankly, like we've seen since, around 1973, 72. So with some corrective phases in there. But it is kind of funny, you know, you look at the spike back in the late 70s and it looked just as big as the recent one we had now. But now when you're looking at the chart long term, it looks like a little speed bump in the road. So yeah, everything ends up being relative, but you're correct. We are looking at the short-term corrective declining trend, but it is amidst a much broader, longer rising metals valuation, which plays into the discussion about government overspending and inflationary printing.
Well, and one thing that occurred to me, and I don't know if you have a chart for this, Miles, but over the last 4 weeks, every week has closed higher than the week before. Now, I know that's an even shorter trend inside a short-term corrective trend, but that actually shows some momentum starting to pick up.
Yeah, if you go back to the decline at the end of January into February, where we really topped out in the gold price, throughout February, gold tried pretty hard to climb back up to those previous highs. In fact, it got within a couple hundred bucks, less than $200 of getting back up to that 5,600 mark. Actually, what we saw there, Rob, was something pretty similar, where we had four consecutive rising weeks of gold following that big crash week. Well, then we had three down weeks, almost a fourth, because it was in that fourth week that we went down and put in our new low at 4,100. This would have been the week of March 23rd, so right there at the end of March. But it actually closed that week up. So we had a hard ball bouncing, hitting the ground, coming back up. And like you said, we've now had four consecutive rising weeks, and we'll see how this week closes. It's currently pretty even. But we could see gold march back up here to at least come up to this kind of declining parallel trading range, which probably ends up putting gold here somewhere around $5,000. Now, once we get to that $5,000 mark, now we have to ask, okay, which direction is momentum going to push gold when you come to either a floor or a ceiling in the trading world? You know, where traders are looking to place orders back and forth to try to pinch off swings in the market. What is the momentum going to tell us as far as pushing gold up? Are we going to go back to the highs, you know, the rebound highs at 53, 5400, where it failed to get to the January highs? Could we even go back to those January highs at 5600? But you got to get through 5000 first. Now, if it doesn't, same line of thinking, we could then see a couple consecutive down weeks in the price of gold. Could it get below 4,000 again? And this is why for the last couple of weeks, I keep trying to encourage clients to, during the down periods, just be consistently adding to ounces as you do. But if we see $4,000 gold again or $3,800, if it follows this trending channel down, you can be darn sure I'm going to try to buy a little bit of extra gold outside of my small every couple of week purchases I do through our Vaulted program.
Well, I think you have to step back and look at the big picture. I mean, what is the momentum long term for gold? If you look at the global picture of how much in global reserves is in gold, if you go all the way back to 1980, 62% of global reserves were in gold. By 2015, that percentage fell from 62% all the way down to 9%. 10 years later, at the end of 2025, global reserves had tripled to 27%. And then what happened to the U.S. dollar since 2015? Well, in 2015, the U.S. dollar's share of total global reserves was at 60%. 10 years later, it's down to 40%. We can see the long-term trend for both the U.S. dollar and for gold. I'm with you, Miles. I add a little bit to my vaulted account every 2 weeks. If we can see a drastic decline in gold, you better believe I'll find the money to buy some more.
You can't get sucked into the short term.
No.
You know, it's not about that. I'm glad you guys are focusing on the long term because the war has been dogging the metals. Gold's still down 10% since the conflict broke out. It's not this perfect geopolitical hedge that most people make it out to be.
Right.
Those are short-lived spikes, and oftentimes it's short-term declines. But between that conflict and then short-term liquidity needs, you've got some massive selling in the metals, and that may continue. But here we're talking about the highest valuation ever for the stock market. S&P 500 is at an all-time high. And yet gold, in that period of time that Miles just drew out, has outperformed the S&P 500. And it's done it very quietly with no management, you know, and you're not paying interest. And to me, it's indicative of the dollar. That's why that asset allocation we talk about in that investment triangle, you have a savings component. You need to have some liquid assets, but that doesn't mean you have to be saving strictly in cash. You can still be getting a return. But those assets have climbed. You're seeing record highs at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. For some people at the gas pump, oil prices are still incredibly high. The cost of living, housing, insurance, all of that is the highest it's been. And that is because of that slow death of the U.S. dollar, the purchasing power. And so much of that has to do with the money supply. And the Federal Reserve is not cutting rates. We've got a new Fed chairman that's going through the congressional hearings in order to be formally instated as the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Kevin Warsh. And he says, well, I want inflation to be so tame that nobody talks about it. Okay, that'd be great, right? But we know they want 2% a year, which means they want your cost of living to be going up at least 2% every year. You know, he says that he wants complete independence. Well, we've seen the bullying from the White House towards Powell right now and trying to get him to cut rates. And he's not, but I'll tell you what they are doing. They're quantitative easing again, and nobody's talking about it. Through the back door, they've got these balance sheet expansions. So they're increasing at a 10% annual rate over the past 4 weeks. That's a huge liquidity spike, and that is rocket fuel to this stock market euphoria. And so Trump is talking a bunch of half-truths and deceits about the Iranian negotiations to keep the stock market happy. We've got the Federal Reserve that's juicing the markets with money printing without having to cut rates in a way that's not argued for because of inflation climbing. And that's been going on in perpetuity, you guys. And it's also why the debt is at $39.15 trillion now. That's why you buy gold. That's why you buy real assets. That's why you buy equities. That's why you buy anything other than sit in cash. To buy gold is one component. To buy silver is another. To buy platinum and palladium. Platinum's shockingly strong in this environment where you're supposed to have GDP slowing and inflation ramping up. That's a stagflation, but the white metals aren't showing that.
Silver is going to have a similar story to gold.
Higher highs and higher lows?
Yeah, like we talk about often. Silver is just the emotional kid sister of gold. It just is. It's going to do what gold does, just more aggressively, higher highs and higher lows. And we're seeing the same thing. We had a peak out of like 122. I still can't believe that that happened. But back in January, $122 an ounce was silver's price, at least there for about 6 minutes. But then significant stair steps down. But Rob, we're seeing the same pattern here where you're looking at four consecutive weeks of rising silver prices within this declining kind of corrective phase that silver's in. You've got to get back to what Rob was talking about a second ago, where it's when you take the zoom out and you look at sort of the long-term meandering trend up of something that is literally just a rock that gets dug out of the ground. Silver isn't worth a penny more today than it was 50 years ago. And I think that's key to remember. We have this expectation of a new Fed chair coming in. We've got a president that is hoping they're going to be the Fed chair they want, which is going to lower interest rates, increase inflation, make capital available to anybody who wants it at the expense of our kids and grandkids. That's their problem to deal with. Don't even talk about that. And I think everybody is starting to see what the end result of that is. I mean, the inflation we're facing now at this quote unquote 2 or 3% inflation rate, my cost of gas has doubled over the last year. Anybody else's? And that's not just the Strait of Hormuz. We can keep finding excuses to blame things on, but eventually the general public is starting to wake up to just the grinding pain of fiat currency inflation. And what scares me about it is what may be coming around the corner next. What if the U.S. government decides to come up with something that just might be a little bit more stable?
Well, the whole thrust to stablecoin is a misnomer. When people hear the U.S. government's going to adopt stablecoin instead of Federal Reserve notes, a stablecoin is tied to one of four things. They're either tied to a currency like U.S. dollars or a commodity like gold or a basket of cryptocurrencies, or it itself is an algorithm. The U.S. changing banking settlement in stablecoin would be tied directly to the U.S. currency, but it is not limited like, say, Bitcoin, which has in charter, how many Bitcoins are they going to make? 21 million?
I think it's 21 million. I can look that up. I think we're at like 18 or 19 million have been created thus far, and it's supposed to stop around 21 million. I am confident there is somebody listening right now that is going to answer that in the comments of the YouTube channel. So somebody will answer that question for you after we post this on YouTube.
So according to the charter of Bitcoin, it will be a limited universe. But according to where the United States is going, stablecoin tied to U.S. dollars, that's an unlimited universe. And so people think it'll be a stable store of value. No, it'll be stable in terms of U.S. dollars. But now you have the federal government seeing every transaction that you do. And as far as your private assets, everything you do is revealed.
Yeah.
When you buy gold, it's the only liquid asset that you can own privately that nobody knows about and can be transferred at your discretion without anybody looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Rob. You know, language matters. And Rob, what's the difference between inflation and quantitative easing?
Nothing.
Then why don't they just use the same word?
It's all about the money supply. Right. How many dollars in circulation?
Yeah. What's the difference between fiat paper money and stablecoin?
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's tied to U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
Now, there are stablecoins that are tied to gold out of Switzerland. And if you want to take delivery, you can fly to Switzerland and they'll hand you your gold for a fee. But stablecoin and cryptocurrencies are the future. People need to come to terms with it. Just because you're not interested in buying Ethereum or Bitcoin doesn't mean it's not going to be your reality in the next few years.
And this is all just a scramble to solve the problem of the fact that the U.S. dollar is near an end. It's not only coming, it's near. And so there's this grand global economic reset, this reorganization, if you will, that's obviously centered and based upon currency exchange, even going back to the formation of the BRICS and how they have tried to align not only for trade, but through currency and avoiding the bullying that the U.S. dollar has caused them to suffer.
I mean, that's why we did that to ourselves by weaponizing U.S. treasuries and dollars and beating people that didn't do what we wanted them to do.
That's right. And the petrodollar was the primary form and fashion of that, with most of the oil in the world being exchanged through U.S. dollars or being required to. And now that percentage is shrinking. And now you're seeing a transition from the petrodollar to the petroyuan. Morgan goes into this in the Hard Assets Insights. And it's a very important thing to understand because this reorganization is something that Bloomberg just pointed out. Deutsche Bank's gone into how this Iranian war, with hindsight, we'll see how influential it was in the dollar's demise and the initiation of the petro-yuan trade. He goes into an article about SIPs with the exchange that China now has and the ability to circumvent, from an international settlement standpoint, the U.S. dollar. They're trading trillions of dollars now through this cross-border interbank payment system, the CIPS. That can avoid the SWIFT system that we use to block Russia from global trade. Well, now they have alternatives. We as individuals have to have alternatives. I had a client ask, do you see it ramping up where people are starting to accept gold and silver as legal tender again at the stores? Look, that's been going on. Gold and silver are legal tender, and that hasn't changed. Where we're seeing it ramp up is on the global level with sovereign entities where they're circumventing the U.S. dollar. So it may not be a psychological event on the Main Street level. That may be the last stage. Keep your eyes on what the big money's doing right now. And this fight over oil and the Strait and the Middle East and trying to neuter China's position with Middle East oil access and Venezuelan oil access and these chess pieces that are being moved around, it has a lot to do with dollar hegemony as the U.S. world reserve currency. And it's why you have to also diversify out of the U.S. dollar. And it goes back around to asset allocation, owning real assets. Doesn't have to be gold. I recommend that it be gold because it's got the 5,000-year track record. But find an alternative.
Well, it's the easiest way to have a globally diversified portfolio, at least to some extent. Take the average American investment portfolio. You own a home. You have probably a 401k with your American company invested in the American stock market. You have your banking system. You have your cash positions. The entirety of most Americans' investments, whether they, I'm diversified, I don't just have my money in the equities market. I own real estate. I've got liquidity. I own bonds. Everything I'm hearing there is saying, well, all of those things are tied together. This isn't me being pessimistic. This is just realistic. 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, 2008, 2020. You know, Y2K. I mean, there's so many examples where when you have a entire systemic issue, there are no safe havens if all of your assets are denominated in the same thing. And then on top of that, the thing all of those assets are denominated in, they're just printing more of it every year. I mean, for Pete's sake, the United States has diversified out of the United States and bought gold. The country that issues the currency is diversifying out of their own currency into something that they can earn no residual income off of, absolutely is a pet rock, and yet it's still one of the best performing assets over the last 25 years.
Well, I used to have people call me and say, you know, okay, so if the U.S. dollar goes to nothing and I have gold, what good does that do me if nobody has any money to buy it with? And I used to get all intellectual and say, well, you're just confusing a means of exchange with a store of value. And that, of course, did not answer their question. Because to the degree that people feel comfortable with the financial system and how they are doing within it, they're not going to be interested in owning gold. But to the degree that they're beginning to lose faith in the financial system and the currency, et cetera, that will dictate their consideration of how much they should allocate to gold. And the world has already signaled a move to gold.
Yeah, the financial system has already lost faith in the financial system. So
what
are the rest of us waiting for?
Well, I mean, when you start hearing Wall Street firms like Goldman and others saying, hey, 20-25% is probably a good idea to have gold right now.
Right.
That's never happened in my lifetime.
No, and unfortunately, they're focusing more on just the performance. Like they can go back and see that, oh, yeah, it's okay. It was up 54% last year, got some attention. In the 5 years prior to that, it was up 80% cumulatively. So you've got these great annual returns. That's what draws their attention.
That's a great point.
Okay, going back 50 years, it's averaged over 10% a year. And again, like I said, it's outperformed the S&P 500. But they don't get an asset under management fee for it. They don't want to see you own the physical coin or bar because they can't charge you once that happens, right?
And they can't get their bonuses, yeah.
And again, we're not telling you not to invest through a financial advisor or broker or financial planner. They've got insight and expertise that we don't have and don't claim to have.
Yeah,
but that's what the diversification gets you. But I'll tell you this, the demise of the dollar has been very much in the open. The fallibility of the U.S. dollar global system is there for everybody to see. And China's been working on this for 10 years, again, because they were worried about being locked out of the SWIFT system for any number of reasons. So wisely, they've created alternatives. And that's all we're saying is if all you have is cash in the bank, you have got to create alternatives for yourself, because we don't know how things play out. And we can say, well, I don't understand the, you know, the whole cryptocurrency and digital currency world and blockchain technology and stable coins. I get it. But you create alternatives for yourself in any number of forms or fashion. And all we know is this niche. And we try to get these ounces to compound with our strategies, and whether that's in an IRA or whether that's in your private possession. It doesn't matter, as long as the portfolio owns some of it.
Well, that's going to do it this week on Golden Rule Radio. As always, we appreciate you stopping by. If you liked what you heard, we encourage you to head on over to our website, where you can find additional information, this show, as well as other weekly written and audio pieces each week. So you can find us at McElvaney.com. That's McElvaney.com. And you can reach us at 1-800-525-9556. Thanks for listening and have a great week.